4. If logic was to have a cognitive dimension at all, it had to be cognition of something. If all cognitive categories are categories of reality as well, then whatever we know is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. On the other hand, if the categories of empirical reality are also cognitive categories, there would be nothing we could not or even do not know. For critical theorists, however, the experience of non-identity between these two spheres, that is, in the final analysis of subject and object, was the starting point and its admission a matter of intellectual integrity. Every phenomenon we know is a synthesis in the Kantian sense, but we are not commonly aware of the socio-historical a priori which constitutes this synthesis, that we experience an assemblage of data as a unified phenomenon at all, is prima facie evidence for our synthesizing activity. Unless we assume that the coordinating synthesizing categories are timeless, as Kant and after him a certain positivism said, lags may develop, or rather are ever present. If reality turns out not to fit the categories anymore, this is not just an indication of the imperfection of categories, but also signals our discovery of the composite and constituted, that is, made unity we have experienced. Page 401. To an extent, therefore, the experience of unity is symptomatic of naive consciousness, a consciousness not yet or no longer self-conscious, still experiencing reality as something out there in its own right, yet somehow coinciding with our understanding. This naive identity of subjective cognitive forms and objective content of experience of reality is to be strictly distinguished from its negative image. Footnote 86, text. The ideological pretense of such an identity that reason and reality coincide in a given society, for all the utopian truth content of this ideology, it conceals that any reality is usually far from reasonable. By contrast, the dialectical productive totality is not one of indistinguishable ingredients. The notion of unity, Plato had already argued, presupposes multiplicity and division. Non-identity is the very precondition of reality as realization. The subjective and objective ingredients of a synthesis move at different paces and in different directions, and the changing properties, predicates of the objects of our experience reveal the situation contingency day by day. But without such temporal synthesis, from which we tend to quickly eliminate our active contribution, converting it into a property of the object, without such self-objectification, with which in turn we interact as with independent alien entities, reality would not be realization and history would not move at all. Hegel had called the periods of non-conflict, of happiness, the dead periods of history. A dialectical totality realizes itself only through its part, through the gap, through alienation, reflection. In short, all these modes that are anathema to Gestalt theory. Footnote 87, text. That is the Gestalt notion of unity. The whole is neither a mystical entity nor are the parts self-sufficient qualitative monads, packages of static predicates, determinations, as Hegel calls the predicates, the overlapping procedural modalities we spoke of. Nor is contradiction itself the Heraclitian essence, absolute, idealism glorified. Footnote 88. Text. The contradiction is not resolved, but the abstract opposition, the isolation of theses, antitheses, is transcendent, absorbed into a working synthesis, the new working reality we spoke of, the very frame of reference, the reality, the truth which made the poles opposite, is thus transcended, while the identity of the poles is thus maintained, as in transcending a double bind. Dialectical thinking is a realization that things are opposite, mutually exclusive only in specific frames of reference. 4. The dynamic contradiction between non-identical moments of totality is therefore basically a contradiction between the subjective and objective moments of the constitution process of reality as realization. Their contemporary unit in the experienced object retain these anti-ethical aspects. Also, it synthesizes them into a working alliance. Page 402. But the different components in turn develop alliances with other such packages, which changes their internal composition, makes them non-identical with their own previous identity, and so on. A dialectical unity is a unity that is pattern of opposites and not the result of short-circuiting the tension, as contemporary official dialectical materialism is wont to do. Collapsed into the concept of an all-defining matter in motion, as the substratum of reality, of which consciousness is but one manifestation, dialectic in this version appears exiled into an all-defining and fetishized objectivity, and is thus effectively dissolved. No dialectical without subjectivity, as negative as the non-identical, as transcendence, by definition, subjectivity is the motor of history. Nor is the dialectical relation a matter of mere interaction. Interdependence, terms often haphazardly used to paraphrase the process. The subject-object relation cannot be described in terms of fixed realities, which are conceptually transparent and which move toward each other. Footnote 89, text. Rather, dialectic is methodically the mutual negation and production of the subjective and objective moments. Footnote 90, text, in the formation of concepts. As Adorno suggested, subjectivity is the form of the objective, the how, not the what, in reality. As distinct from the objective aspects, individual identity consists only of the act of transcendence of these aspects, that is, the activity of negation. Just like reason, as its agent, therefore, subjectivity is neither exclusively transcendental, as Fichte would claim, nor exclusively empirical, as dialectical materialism would have it, nor a little of both, but it is both and both simultaneously. Our language, which distinguishes between I and me, is deceptive in this respect. Not only the Cartesian object, the me, is empirical, but the I itself is too. The empirical knowledge, that is, what is conceivable, delimits what the individual, the subject, can or even must do. In Hegel, the productive activity of the mind also and simultaneously appropriates its own product, just as the product appropriates, shapes, the subject. Footnote 91, text. Just as in Kant's terms, nothing is constituted without the subjective conditions of reason as the constituting agent. No such agent or mental conditions are even possible. So Hegel, acts unless they are agents or conditions of real individuals who, as part of the general, are themselves something more than just subjective. Footnote 92. Text. The various experiential categories, including subjectivity, are thus formed through the very object world they are to order and explain. This reciprocity of form and content, subjectivity being the categories, planes of possible experience, objectivity being what is experienced, lead Hegel to this famous dictum, that form is always that of its content. Page 403. Form is a synonym, inbegriff of mediation. Adorno formulated, it explains why subjectivity cannot be a substance by itself, but is the form in which we experience objects, and thus why the two, subjectivity and objectivity, are not separable, like two substances, but are moments, aspects of one and the same process. Rather than try to eliminate the inevitable subjectivity operative in any perspective or approach, therefore we should bring this subjectivity back to its objectivity. Footnote 93, text. Adorno demanded that is be self-reflexive in our procedures. Methodologically, we should be inside and outside the object simultaneously. The open-endedness of this cognitive process, knowledge as growing consciousness, is an imperfection only if we use as a standard a closed system of informational units whose substantive irrelevance is the price paid for eternal consistency. Footnote 94, text. Not how systematic a theory indicates its maturity and quality as traditional theory would have it, but what it includes and what it excludes. The inconclusive dialectic does not lose the stamp of truth. The critical and relativizing trait necessarily belongs to cognition. Footnote 95, text. In other words, only dialectical reason is capable of being its own meta-reason. Dialectical logic does not suspend the rules of understanding, Verstand. Dialectical logic, having as its object the forms of movement of the progress of knowledge, includes the collapse and restructuring of fixed systems and categories as part of its proper object domain. Footnote 96, text. Finally, bound up with the dialectic of subject and object is that of theory and praxis, commonly misunderstood as the application of the theory. To apply a theory, however, presupposes the very gap of application pretends to bridge. If, in fact, every new insight about an object literally changes the identity of the object and thus our attitude, expectation, and action toward it, theory would be adequate to reality precisely in the sense that Hegel had postulated. It would simply follow the movement of reality itself as constituted by us and would thus be the our consciousness of that reality, including our potential constitutive role it. Such a theory would not need application. This theory, consciousness as reality, already delimits the range of possible desirable relations that may obtain toward our creation. At the same time, such delimitations, once conscious, means that we have already transcended this stage, reaching a new perspective from which our activity appears as a delimitation, a new stage of insight, the objectification of our subjectivity, and so on. Page 404. This famous dialectic of limits.